So, Principles of Marketing, Marketing 25010. I'm still Dr. Marks, and this is August 30th, I think. Lecture notes page is not 8. I mistyped that. 38, I think. Does that look right from anybody who has a lecture notes? 38. Thank you. And so, we're going to start today hearing from Chris Maher and Sarah Knoll, talking briefly about the current version of the American Marketing Association with some exciting new stuff that is open to all majors.
Thank you very much, Dr. Marks. So yes, I'm Chris Maher. I'm the faculty advisor. I'm also a professor of marketing here at the university, and I have with me our director of recruiting for the American Marketing Association, Sarah Knoll. So we'll be talking to you for a couple of minutes today. I know that you guys probably have lots of stuff outside of classes that you're doing. We think that this opportunity is something that you should really consider if you are a marketing major or marketing minor or have interest in marketing outside of your major. So we are switching the focus of the group to be more application-based. We have a client that we are going to take over social media for, a local restaurant here just down the road, Mamacita's, and start doing their social media posts and scheduling. And we are going to have people who work on analytics for that and strategy. And all these things are going to be great for your resumes if it's something that interests you, where you could have real interaction with a company, real data to show that you made a difference in terms of getting their message out there and sales and all sorts of stuff like that. And again, lots of different roles within that. So we meet every Wednesday, which is tonight, at 7 p.m. in 483 in the business building. Let's see. Okay, and this QR code here, if you scan this QR code, it'll generate an automatic email. It'll generate an automatic email where you can contact us, and then we will be able to reach out and give you more information, or you could just show up tonight. So if you guys want to scan that code, and let me have Sarah talk about some of the things we've done in the past. I know she wasn't here, but she can talk a little bit about what it is that we're going to do and what we've done in the past. I'll click for you.
Okay. Thank you. So like Chris said, it's a great resume builder. It's hands-on experience, industry experience, build on skills you already have in social media or new skills. Exciting things that are coming up, we're going to tour the CAVS facility and meet with their marketing department, learn kind of what kind of industry experience they have and job opportunities potentially. We did go back and visit the Vivid Front last year, where students learned about marketing agencies and where social media can really take you as a career. And then our conference in New Orleans, there's an opportunity to attend if that is something you may be interested in. Last year it was in Chicago, but yeah.
Thanks, Sarah. And so you might click one more time. And so, yeah, if you want to come and check it out, we'd love to see you. We're a relatively new group. There's still a lot of opportunities for roles to make it what you want. We're different than other organizations in that we are doing things, that are real-world things every day and not, like, lectures and things like that. And so if that's something that you're interested in, again, QR code or amakentstate@gmail.com. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Sarah. Very good. Appreciate the talk. I think at this point it's clear from what I can tell, they know they have the book in the bookstore at this point, and so you can get the physical book if you want it, and the lecture notes if you want it, so that eventually I'll stop showing that slide. The next mini-test 2, will open on its regular schedule, which is posted everywhere, tomorrow at 8 a.m., and it will close Sunday on its regular schedule at 11:59 p.m., covering this week's materials, so Lecture 3 and 4, and the textbook material that I'll send you the detail on in my email. Eventually, I'll get rid of that as well because it's coming up. So here we have a company that does what I'd say is called trade or industry research, and they share information in popular press and also to people involved in the industry. So Amazon, Google, Apple, and Target have emerged as four of the top five most culturally resonant brands. So if you're in marketing, if you're in the field, you might want to know what's really resonating with people. Here's research from the marketing arm, which is a research group that's sharing this information. So those four out of the five top brands culturally resonant with adult consumers, according to this new report. So understanding consumer attitudes, doing marketing research. Amazon topped the list in the marketing arm report, which awards brands up to 100 points in each of its four cultural resonance categories, which are recognition, we'll talk about that in a second, alliance, engagement, and advocacy. Then they take the average of the four sub-scores to determine the brand's overall score. Google followed Amazon in second place with Crayola. How many of you guys have fond memories of Crayola as kids? Yeah? They were a little surprised in this research that it resonated along with things like Google and Amazon, but it did with people. And Apple in fourth place with Target rounding out the top five. So there's sort of the list. The four categories are recognition. So they ask among these brands how clearly the consumer understands a brand's function, which, by the way, would be related to whether or not it's got a good strategy. We've been talking about corporate strategy. Alliance, or how closely the brand's values align with the consumer's values. Engagement, or consumer's willingness to spend time with the brand. And advocacy, the extent to which a consumer acts as an ambassador for the brand in their daily lives. So those are the measures. Crayola surprised us, but it makes sense, says the executive VP of strategy at the ad agency. They have endured for generations with an evolving product mix that stays true to the brand's purpose. We talked about staying true to your values and your purpose last time. Therefore, recognition and alliance. They've also invested in experiences and influencers, which help lift engagement and advocacy. Every marketer should want to dominate their category the way Crayola does. So my comment is, this is success through a focus on core company values, brand purpose, and corporate strategy. Among Gen Z consumers, it's a little different. So born between 97 and 2012, there the most culturally resonant brands were a little different. So it's really important that we understand not everybody is the same. There are age cohorts, and they often have different values among the various age groups. YouTube and Marvel are two brands that didn't make the top five among the broader group, but these ranked first and third for Gen Z. For Gen Z, Apple ranked in second place, Target in fourth, and Google in fifth. YouTube scored substantially higher among Gen Z than any of the other top scoring brands among the overall population. So YouTube, really popular among that group. Each of the four pillars of cultural resonance the marketing arm identifies is also tied to different, what we've been talking about, marketing strategies. So if you're interested in being culturally resonant, what might you focus on? Recognition by having good brand storytelling, using a really good approach to get your people to truly understand what your brand stands for. Alliance involves putting your brand into places that the consumer already has a passion for through marketing strategies such as product placement or influence partnerships. Who watches America's Got Talent? Anybody? Yeah, not that many people. Did you happen to watch the most recent thing like last night? Anybody watching the live stuff that was going on? I digress entirely from my main lecture by saying over the summer we were at a beach bar, and at the beach bar was the bizarrest of the heavy metal bands, and they were called, it's on the top of my head too, I want to talk about it, I shouldn't do things extemporaneously, whatever they were called from this little beach bar, they were on America's Got Talent last night. That isn't why I bring them up. What's the product placement sponsor, if it's still true, for America's Got Talent? What do they always have on their table? Anybody know? Used to be.
Dunkin' Donuts?
I thought, Dunkin'? Maybe, I thought it was, which one? Snapple. See, I'm bringing stuff up that I'm not positive about. It used to be Coca-Cola, and it may still be. So on all their desks, you would see product placement for Coca-Cola. The other ones may be true, too, for all I know. But Coca-Cola, we're getting culturally relevant because we're in the popular places showing our brand through product placement, which was a long way of getting at that point. Brands can boost engagement through experiential marketing tactics, whether in person or through digital experiences such as Roblox activation. Some of you guys have done something on Roblox at all? How many of you guys have heard of Roblox at all? Okay. So here's the impact of marketing strategies in becoming culturally resident. Ultimately, consistency in a brand's identity and marketing, not just jumping on into online trends or pop culture moments, is essential to achieving cultural resonance, says the VP of strategy at the ad agency. Even if you aren't a customer in one of those brands, you know what they do. You know what they stand for. They don't waver from that. So one way of being relevant is to know your values and stick by them. How many of you guys know Capri Sun? Did you guys drink those pouches as kids? Maybe still as adults? Okay. Capri Sun pitches its drink as a, quote, kid noise-canceling technology in a fun ad. Capri Sun is spoofing high-tech gadget marketing with an amusing back-to-school campaign from the ad agency called Mischief that positions its drink pouches as kid noise-canceling technology, offering 50 seconds of calm, the average time it takes a kid to suck one down, during the busy end of summer season. So we see a bit of humor in advertising, we see getting attention, and we see the ad theme. The kid noise cancellation juice drinks package are packaged up to look like a headphones product, well, sort of up there. They became available on noisecancellingjuicedrink.com with no purchase necessary. The giveaway includes two pouches per box and a $100 credit to TaskRabbit, which is a platform that can allow harried parents to outsource some of their back-to-school chores to someone called a Tasker in their area. So we're seeing sales promotion, we're seeing marketing partnerships. Mischief also put together a fun video where shoppers in an electronics store are introduced to Capri Sun's innovation to noise cancel kids. Thank you.
Capri Sun.
Hey.
Hello.
How you doing?
All right.
Capri Sun has come out with some of the best noise canceling technology.
Did you say Capri Sun?
So say you just wanted 50 seconds of peace and quiet. Wireless kid noise canceling technology.
What is that? Like,
wait, it cancels the noise of the kid?
And you still seem confused.
Yes, I am.
Yeah, yeah. Look, I'm going to spin this around and I'm going to open it.
Capri Sun.
What is that?
These are instructions.
Can't Capri Sun juice drink to a loud kid?
That's you, Nate. You're the loud one here. You're the loud kid right here, right? Look at this. Step two, watch kid puncture pouch and begin drinking. Oh, you're a pro at this, huh? Now you listen. You hear that?
Oh.
Silence.
That's good.
And when you drink it, you're drinking it so you can't talk.
It's simple but effective.
I am in love with this.
Yeah. Well, how do we feel about it? Yeah.
It should be longer.
Yeah.
And no, you can't get rid of me by getting me a Capri Sun. I still talk. So it's sort of a cute approach. It's a humorous approach. It gets the point across in an unusual way for the product categories. The parent I know just how valuable an extra 50 seconds of quiet time is. And the goal of this campaign is to let parents understand that Capri Sun juice drink can help them buy that extra time, much needed time. So understanding the target market, we're creating value for them with a little humor. The campaign is backed by paid social across Meta, TikTok, driving parents to the launch site where a limited quantity of packs will be available every day. So we're getting consumers' involvement. When parents buy these new juice packs, they're buying themselves some much-needed peace and quiet. Our partnership with TaskRabbit is a strategic effort to give parents back what they really need, time to themselves without worry. So again, understanding consumer needs, wants, and desires and finding ways, interesting ways, to fulfill them. This next one, I had to say a bit of, remember my first day, I said, welcome to the wonderful world and wacky, wonderful something world, wacky world of marketing. This one is a little wacky for me. Maybe you'll say, oh, yeah. The Fabricant, that's the name of the company, launches digital clothing collection featuring AR fashions. Digital fashion house The Fabricant released the first products in its latest NFT. How many people do know NFT? How many people don't know NFT? Don't know it? So I have to digress for just a second, I think, to make sure we know what we're talking about. A while ago, a couple years now ago, they created the idea that we will produce something digital, and you can pay for this digital thing and have own it exclusively. It's called non-fungible tokens, NFTs. Now you might say, wait a minute, if I own something on the internet, can't anybody copy it and own it? Well, that's like saying, who knows the Mona Lisa? Where is the Mona Lisa? In the Louvre in France. Well, can't I just go online and make a copy of that? Yeah, but you don't own the Mona Lisa. The Mona Lisa's in the Louvre. NFTs are things that are digitally owned by you. And people are paying ridiculous amounts of money for art and other bizarre things online. Do we know this at all? Does that sound familiar? All right. So here comes a company that says, I can make money at that. What I'm going to do is I'm going to create a fashion collection that's only digital. So it's featuring items that owners can virtually wear in augmented reality. My comment is, what? But we are seeing the application of technology and augmented reality in marketing. The Whole Land Primal Rave NFT collection is described as the culmination of the Fabricant's Whole Land fashion narrative, which began with the Whole Land XX series collection in 2022, followed by Whole Land Capers collection in 2023. The Primal Rave collection features six digital outfits available in quantities ranging from 150 to 450. Wait a minute, it's digital. What do you mean you're going to limit the production of the product? That's a strategy. The outfits are priced between $30 and $50. So you're going to go online and you're going to buy a digital piece of clothing that you can only use online or in augmented reality or in some games. The outfits, what they're doing here is using something called, it's a term, scarcity marketing. Scarcity marketing is where we create scarcity through limited quantities that we come out, and it intensifies some people's desire for the product. It's exclusive, digital. And of course, we're seeing pricing the marketing mix. I can show you, but actually can't say the name of all of their things where I'm being recorded by young people, but here is their site. The Whole Land Prime Rave, the sale is open. You can now buy it. Here's a bit about their background, and here's some of the various sorts of things. Some of this I can say, hardcore happiness. Others I can't really say, but you see the various fashion choices you have here. Forbidden fruit, ecstasy, and they're showing you how many are available. So here, 147 out of 150 are available. Here, 250 are available, here, 150, and some had less at some point in time. Then, as I'll talk about in a minute, they suck you in. I mean, they give you the opportunity to get involved with some free digital stuff that you can have and wear. Three of the outfits are available now. The Fabricant will debut a video presentation for the collection on September 5th as part of New York Fashion Week. And on that day, the other three outfits will become available to purchase. So we're seeing new product rollout. We're building anticipation among those consumers who just can't wait for a digital fashion collection. What am I saying? Coming soon. So, select premium items from the Primal Rave collection can be worn in augmented reality through the Fabricant's mobile app. And that's what we're seeing up in the upper left. The outfits are also compatible with the Ready Player Me cross-game avatar platform, while the free pumps, boots, and lace boots that I showed you a minute ago, those NFTs are not wearable on those game things. So you get them for free but you only see them in augmented reality. The Fabricant is the latest company to utilize augmented reality technology in the world of fashion. Where are my fashion students, by the way? So there goes your career. You don't need any pattern. You don't need any sewing. You don't need any cloth. Just do something digitally. Oh, that's not what we're teaching you. Well, go join the AMA club. They'll teach you something digital. Fashion brands such as Coach and Tommy Hilfiger have previously allowed shoppers to, quote, try on, select real-world items in AR before making a purchase, technology and marketing, but this is only in AR, only digital. Really? How many people are interested in this concept? Yeah, I might do that. Mm-hmm. Web students, any? Not you either. I guess we're not the target audience for this. All right, lecture notes, page 38, chapter 2 in the textbook, we pick up with a discussion about corporate and marketing strategy. And we just left off thinking about, if you call Valerie, talking to us about mission in her organization and how it drives what opportunities she will or won't take on in her company. And so we just finished off with this notion that our mission has to drive our goals and objectives, which are going to drive our marketing mix out to the marketplace. So goals or objectives have to be smart. And I presume, but maybe I'm wrong, that you've heard of these ideas of smart goals and smart objectives before, maybe in a management course. But now we're reminding marketers that they have to be smart. For example, they have to be specific so that you know what you're doing. They have to be measurable, so you can tell if you did what you're supposed to be doing. They have to be attainable. Who's worked for a company, maybe, who set a new set of goals for you that just, you know, they can't, it can't happen. You can't do that. Has anybody ever had that experience? No? Yeah, one person. Did that, knowing you can't do it, it's a stretch beyond, did that motivate you? No, it doesn't I need something I can reach, I can stretch to. So it has to be attainable as you set these things up that are relevant to whatever it is we're doing, whatever our mission is, and that are time-based, that lets us know when to get this measurable, specific, relevant, attainable thing done. So sometimes people don't think of these as they set out goals and objectives for their people, and of course they aren't very effective, duh. So, Time Warner Business Services goal, Spectrum now, was to, quote, keep our business growing 25% per year in our region. Seems pretty specific, seems pretty measurable. I guess it's attainable. It certainly would be relevant. And there's a time. There's time-based involved. Here he is talking about just what I said.
We have approximately 20-some thousand customers on the business side. And I believe the addressable market here is about 150,000 businesses or so in our footprint. We actually go up through Erie, PA too. So we have a little bit of that. So what we look at when we determine growth rates and things like that, okay, how many businesses are out there? Market penetration, where are we built out, passings of some sort, and what can we do to keep growing that business 25% or more per year?
So that seems like
we have approximately 20-some thousand
so
customers.
So there's their goal and objective. Now, of course, they have to put their marketing in place to help them accomplish their goal. So here's an ad that sort of helps them to accomplish that goal.
Cooking for a crowd has never fazed us. It's what we'd love to do. That's why we started our catering business. But finding the right internet and phone provider, we just wanted services we could count on that didn't break the bank. Then we heard about Spectrum Business. Best services, best price, and no contracts. We called them and we were up and running in no time. It was so easy.
Make the right choice for your business. Get reliable internet and voice for less and no contracts from Spectrum Business.
So that seems like it would be an ad campaign that would appeal to the folks in this region and help us to accomplish our goal. So it backs that up, an integrated plan. So what are some types of goals we might have? There's a longer list than this, but let's think about some types of goals we might have. We might focus on profit as our goal. So at Goldman Sachs, which is a prominent investment banking and financial services firm, they operate with a profit-focused business model. What we do has to bring in profit. Okay. You could, perhaps, focus on sales. You could focus on dollar sales, you could focus on unit sales, you could focus on number of cats on your funny video that you're playing with right in front of me, if you wanted to. I don't know if that's very specific, actionable, relevant. So how do you feel about that? Okay. Huh? Well, no comment because you're playing with funny cat videos on your phone, dude. It's distracting. Market share, so sales in dollars or in units. Market share, you might focus on the percent of the market that you have. Okay? So Samsung, for example, aggressively pursues market share across its product lines, such as it wants to be, you know, high in market share for smartphones, televisions, home appliances. Quality, you might have as a focus some level of quality. Everything has some level of quality, high level of quality, acceptable quality. Or maybe customer satisfaction could be a goal of yours. And then you would set those appropriate marketing mix things, product, price, place, promotion, to help you attain those goals within the context of the overall corporation. Yeah? Efficiency. Toyota is renowned for its Toyota production system, which emphasizes efficiency and waste reduction in manufacturing processes. Employee welfare could be a focus for you. Google is known for its employee-friendly work environment and lots of benefits. Social responsibility. Who knows Tom's Shoes? What's their big social responsibility thing? What are they? Yeah. Yeah, they may change it to socks, but certainly initially it was shoes. For every pair bought, they're going to donate one to needy people. Wow. That's not a profit focus, because you aren't making money if you're giving things away. It's a social responsibility focus. Yeah? Here's an example I pulled off a website a while ago. I thought it was Portage County here. It's Portage County in Washington State, but it's not important. This is a sample goal from Portage County Health Services, a nonprofit organization. By next year, time-based, 90% measurable of pregnant women will receive prenatal care in the first trimester. By next year, 10% of teen pregnancies will decrease. I mean, the percent of teen pregnancies will decrease to 7% or less of all pregnancies. By next year, low birth weight babies will constitute no more than 5% of live births. So not-for-profit organizations also have strategies, objectives, goals that they have to implement. As we think about setting our strategic directions, I am being a little cute when I say 3.5. 3.5 C's of where we are now. In order to understand where you're going to go, it's good to know where you are right now. So one of these things is your competencies. Our example from last time was the woman who was selling medical services as a consultancy. One of her clients needed a new computer system to make the thing work. She said, we don't do that. No, that's not a place that we can start from. So the half here is your competitive advantage. Who are you? What is your unique selling proposition that you're basing things on? So it's part of your competency. Our customers, who are we marketing to? Who are we doing things for? Who are we bringing value to? And of course, our competitors. They also constrain, define, and help us think about what it is we can do, where we can go. So as you think about building your strategic direction, you want to think about who you are, what you do, who your customers are, who your competition is, as that base platform from which you're going to grow. Now, in crisis situations, such as during the recent COVID pandemic, where we have the rapid change that I talked about, whitewater rapids in which you live, marketers need to have a proactive plan to adjust and adapt how they speak to their customers and how they manage their brands and their teams. So they need to, in advance of the disaster, engage in scenario planning. What direction are we going to take in case this disaster happens? Listen for changes in customer sentiment and behavior. During the pandemic, I'm not going into stores. I'm not going into movie theaters. I'm not going to restaurants. What's it mean for your business? Anticipate operational impacts. If this comes to fruition, what are we going to do strategically? And then adapt the marketing plan. Some businesses were able to, some businesses were not. They weren't thinking ahead. So where do we want to go, given what we know about ourselves? Do we, for example, want to grow all of our brands, all of our products, all of our strategic business units, some of them? Do we want to sustain? Man, we're just going to try to get through this disaster and still be here when it's over. Do we want to divest? I'm done with this. I'm gone. It's out. Or do you want to invest? Is this something that I need to spend more money on? Well, it's not that hard if you're an entrepreneur selling one product to think about these things. But when you're a major company and you're selling hundreds or thousands of products across different strategic business units, it becomes hard to think about these things. So we do have something that helps us to think about it. One approach is a product portfolio model put out by the Boston Consulting Group. It's called the BCG model. And they've done a lot of analysis in thinking about markets. And they said, look, when it comes to strategic planning for your brands, for your strategic business units, there are two really important things to think about as you think about your units. One is the growth rate in the marketplace. And they say anything that's growing slower than 10% annually, well, you can see is low growth. Things that are growing more than 10% annually is high growth. The point about high growth is even your marginal brand, your marginal business, your marginal retail store, if the high growth rate is happening, even those marginal stores look okay. Do you know the expression that a rising tide raises all ships? Even those marginal ones go up. What happens to those marginal ones as growth slows down? They aren't looking so good. You got to get rid of them. And then the question is, how dominant are you in the marketplace against competition? Are you a tenth of the size of your next biggest competitor? You got some issues. You got some problems. Are you 10 times bigger than your next biggest competitor? You're sitting in the Castberg seat. You're doing pretty well. So as you can see, we end up with a 2x2 matrix listed as cash cows, dogs, problem children, a question mark, and stars. High growth rate, and you are dominant. You got a star on your hands. Low growth rate and dominant, you have a cash cow. High growth rate, but you're not very big. You have a problem child or a question mark. You're not sure what to do. Low growth rate and you're not very big. Why are you in that business? Probably it's a dog. So let's think about a cash cow. You're dominant in a low growth market. Well, the growth in sales is not big by definition, right? It's less than 10% a year. But because you're dominant and there's not a lot of churn and activity going on, you should be rolling in a bunch of profits. You should be generating a large cash flow. And because it's a slow growth market and you're the biggest competitor or a really big competitor, you don't have to require a lot of cash resources to be reinvested. So what do you do with all that money rolling in from a strategic planning viewpoint? You look around and you say, where should I be putting that money? And one place you might be putting it in is your problem children. Why? Well, your problem children are situations where you're in a high growth area. Things are cooking, but you're not very big. Since you're not very big, you probably have weak profits. So how am I going to make this entity, my strategic business, my brand, stronger? I'm going to invest money in it. To do what? To make it have larger market share. Now it's got big market share in a fast growth area. That'd be cool. Your stars are strategic business units or brands that are dominant in a high growth area. They have high growth in sales, things are happening, They're profitable. You're big in high growth area, but they require attention. You can't ignore them. Competition will sneak up on you. They do require cash and resources to stay dominant, but what's going to happen to every high growth market over time? Eventually, it's going to slow down. And as it slows down, if you're dominant in it, you have a brand new cash cow, a brand new thing in a slow growth market where you're dominant, bringing in lots of money. That was pretty good planning. Good job. And then we have the dogs. This is a low growth market. Things are not happening very fast. You're small, so you aren't pulling in a lot of money in this slow growth market. So clearly, you aren't going to have a big cash flow in the scheme of things. So it's probably not a very good candidate for cash resources to be reinvested. You probably need a strategy to get out of that particular quadrant. Should a company never have a dog? Should a company never have a dog? What do you think? Yeah, companies really shouldn't have dogs. Nope, they should not. Hands? Companies should have dogs. Okay, why should a company have a dog? Ever. You could learn what not to do. Why else? Yeah. I don't think that taxes is a funny. Are you a finance guy? I was just curious. Okay, taxes. Probably you wouldn't want a dog just for taxes, but that's okay. What other answers we got? Yeah. Keep them humble. I don't think major corporations are looking for ways to be humble, but okay. What other reason might you have a company that occasionally needs to have a dog? One more answer? Yeah. There you go. That's really, I think, the point of why you would end up with dogs. If you never have any dog, you're probably not trying enough things, some of which you're going to fail, you have to get rid of, some of which are going to be successful. So I think it's a matter of companies have to be innovative, not everything works, and some things will end up to be dogs, and you have to decide what to do next. So here, for example, might be the view of Coca-Cola. What is their cash cow? What is not a very fast-growing market where they're pretty dominant? Well, Coke Classic, yeah. So they make pretty good money on Coke Classic. They're rolling in dollars. What for them is a problem child? Do you guys know Peace Hard Tea? Yeah, you know of it. It's a market, but it's growing, but they aren't a major player in it. What are they going to do? Should they find ways to grow it over? What for them is a star? I don't know if it's still a fast growth market, but Dasani in the bottled water market. And they've had a couple dogs because they try innovative things over time. Coca-Cola Black. I think I'll return to that example a couple times. They did research for a while. How many guys, I don't know what you guys do, how many guys drink coffee in the morning? Coffee? Does anybody drink soda in the morning? Soda? So, no? What? You do? Okay, well. So, in fact, they found some people in the morning drink soda instead of coffee to get that boost. So they came up with this brilliant idea a while ago. Why don't we combine coffee and soda and make a coffee-flavored cola? That didn't work out. The reason I wanted soda was because I didn't want coffee, for example. So that was one thing that went away. And then this Coca-Cola Life product came and went, as far as I know. It just didn't work out for them. For Dell, their PCs. PCs are big, but of course it's not a big growth market, but they sell a lot of PCs. Monitors. Especially over the pandemic, were really a booming market as people worked at home. Problem child for them is their VR, their virtual reality headset, and their cloud. There are larger cloud companies than Dell. And something that didn't work out for them, their smartphone. How many of you guys have a Dell smartphone? I don't think anybody does. It's not a thing. Didn't work out. But they tried it. They tried it. There are other approaches to this whole thing. So this is the one called the directional policy matrix. Same goal. How do you make strategic decisions across your brands, your strategic business units? Here, their two dimensions are market attractiveness, high, medium, and low, and how strong you are. Same idea as we saw a minute ago in strong, medium, and weak. And again, these boxes aren't that brilliant. If you have a highly attractive market and you're strong, what should you try to do strategically? You could have figured this out. Maintain your leadership. What should you do if you are weak in a low attractive market? Get rid of the dog, get it out, the best of it. So it's just a little more complicated. For example, Procter and Gamble, pretty strong in products like Tide, Fusion Razors, Pampers. They want to maintain leadership there if they can, yeah? On the other hand, they bought and then decided it wasn't a good fit for them, the copper top battery, and then they harvested it out. They got rid of it because it wasn't a good fit in the end. So what are the growth strategies that you can be using if that's your goal? I've actually touched on this already in Marketing and Business in the U's. One approach that you could have is to sell more current products that you're already making to your current consumers. The strategy is called market penetration. You're trying to dig deeper into that existing consumer base, selling more of your current products to your current consumers. Market penetration is the growth strategy. Or you might choose, here's an example. Sephora's Beauty Insider program rewards people for engaging with their beauty products, and they have 25 million loyal members. Anybody part of Sephora's loyalty group? Or you might choose to develop new products and sell them to your current consumers. This is the idea of product development. Apple, as you know, with new iPhones, iPads, iPods, watches, Apple TVs, etc., they develop new products, and they certainly hope that their current consumers will buy them. iPhone users who just can't wait for the next model to come out. Okay, iPhone users who, although they can't wait for the next, will buy the next model shortly after it comes out. Okay. Selling our current products to new consumers is a different way to grow, and that's called market development as another growth strategy. Razor has typically paid attention to, how many guys as kids rode Razor scooters? Anybody? Okay, great thing for kids. What if we can sell them to adults now? Sell our existing products to our new customers. And I've seen some adults in big cities riding around on Razor scooters. And that black on red doesn't show up very well, but selling new products to new consumers is a growth strategy. That's diversification. And we just saw that example with our friends over at Kroger's selling sushi to new folks who have never tried it before. A new product for Kroger's to a new group of people. Diversification. Sony has set up a new electric vehicle unit. I never thought of them as a car company. As they enter the EV market with a car called Afila, which is a strange name, we'll see what happens with them, if that works out or not. As we think about this whole system that we're implementing of being strategic, we have to know how we're doing. And the way we might do that is through marketing dashboards. These are visual displays on a single computer screen of the essential information relating to achieving a marketing objective. How are you doing on that goal of growing 25% annually in our region with small businesses? How do you know? You got a bunch of salespeople out there doing stuff. How do you know how you're doing? So marketing dashboards can help that.
First of all, the internet has made a huge, huge increase in the amount of information that comes available. First of all, as a general manager of the store, it almost has made it to where we get too much information. We get too many items to available to view. If I sat there and looked at dashboards all day long, which are available, I would be there all day just looking at the internet and numbers, that type of thing. But I have the ability of information systems that we use at the dealership that actually can tell me where sales processes are or where sales are in all departments at any given time. I can look at it 24/7. I have the ability to look at it when I'm not at work. But dashboards play an integral part. I can see how many customers have walked into the store, how many of those customers have taken it through that step-by-step process, where they are in that process, to where we've actually sold them, and where then are they have gone into finance yet, that type of thing. Where is the deal after it's left finance? Have we been paid from the bank? I can follow a deal anywhere from the beginning to end. And the same thing with my service department. I have the ability to look from the moment a customer walks into the door and we write a repair order on it to the point to where we get paid at the very end, whether it be from the bank or from Toyota themselves. But dashboards have created it so much. It's so much easier to look and get information at a glance at any point in time. You can see where you're at in a business standpoint of view. So yes, I use them every day.
So as a manager, he's got two main units, sales, with actually the credit side, and service. So there's a lot of churn going on in his little shop. He needs to know what's going on against his goals and objectives. And as a manager, he wants to know, how are you guys doing in terms of sales as people come into the store? And you're doing really well, but you keep putting people over that don't get good credit. They don't churn the deal. And so I have to know how this stuff is occurring in the moment. We can do it in real time. People walk in, you take care of them, you make the sale, you put over people that don't have good credit. I got to retrain you, right? So it helps us to achieve our goals. Datapine is a company that will help you unlock the full potential of your data with its dashboard.
The biggest thing is I noticed is use it to measure.
I thought I had a click there. Maybe I don't. Maybe it wasn't a very interesting click. And so their dashboard, if it loads, will help you see in real time how are things going in. Yes? How are things going in different areas of your company? I don't really want to play this video. And so clicking here tells you what's happening in different product areas. Clicking here tells you what happens in different locations. Clicking down here tells you what's happening with different customer groups in real time at the moment. Software is out there to help you do that.
The biggest thing is I notice is I use it to measure the type of media that I might be using. If I have a newspaper ad that has a date on it that the sale goes from this day to this day, might be a 3-day period, I'll look and compare on that dashboard to see, did I get an increase in traffic flow at that point in time? And it can tell me right now, right away, what they did. Even in that dashboard, it can tell me, when we have it defined down from the salesperson, the information they entered in, what source of media did they actually use to come into the store. And, you know, we'll be able to track it and see, did that piece work for us? You know, we talk about dashboards and that type of thing. I mean, reports are just unbelievable, but we actually put a different phone number on types of media. So I can track it to see if that actually made an increase in customer awareness or the ability to come into our store. So yes.
So we have our dashboard going, a phone call comes in, the front person answering it puts it into the system. We know where they came from. A salesperson comes in, hi, how you doing? What brought you in today? How'd you hear about us? Was it the Hudson Hub? Was it the Stowe Sentry? Was it the Record Courier? Was it the Cleveland Plain Dealer? Was it an ad you saw on somewhere, television? And we put that stuff in, and it begins to tell us the effectiveness of our media. So we can see which ones aren't working, which ones are working, and adjust as appropriate to bring people back in. And again, to know which of our salespeople need a little remedial training because they aren't producing much results. So with this in mind, we are beginning to be able to use our data to take effective action rather than having piling up in a spreadsheet that we never use or in a data bank that we never use or in the old days sitting in computer paper on the floor that never makes anything effective. As we think about our strategy, we have to have a decision-making approach to guide us. And I think you probably have heard in other areas about SWOT, hands about SWOT analysis, a common thing we know, some of us don't. So SWOT analysis helps us to make our strategic marketing decisions. And what we look at is our factors we can control inside of our own organization. What are our strengths? What are our weaknesses? It could be by brand, it could be by SBU. In the example of the salesperson, it could be by, you know, folks working for us. So some of our strengths involve bringing people in and selling their car. But some of our weaknesses are we bring in people and sell cars and they're not qualified for the financing. Maybe what I need to do is pay attention to that and retrain folks on the financing side so we aren't selling cars that people can't afford. Then we have to look outside of our organization and say, what are the opportunities that are out there for us to think about? And what are the threats that are coming down the pike? When Sony thinks about getting into the electric car vehicle market, they clearly are thinking that they have some strengths in things going, you know, electrical, Sony, and that they have some opportunities coming down the pike, electric vehicles, and perhaps they feel the threat to them is if they don't get involved, they're going to be left behind. We have to see that works out for them. So here we're looking in our little model, and there is the SWOT analysis: strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats, and it helps us to assess those market opportunities that are out there. What are our strengths against these opportunities? What are our weaknesses? What are those opportunities, and what are those threats?
There are few techniques from the MBA experience that gets used any, you know, more than the SWOT analysis. Now, as it may not be formally said, but in almost not every meeting, but when we start talking about strategy, you almost always go back to that because it really helps to ground where you are and ask the questions of yourself, the deep questions not of yourself, but also those who work with you. Are we really there? Are we doing what we're supposed to do? And where do we see the strengths, the weaknesses, the opportunities, the threats? And from that comes, on each one of those points, potentially a much larger strategy, but you at least need to be honest with yourselves and start at that point. There are other techniques that we use as we move down the and try to get down to a more refined strategy, but that really is a core for many discussions.
So Fred is over, if you recall from the first day of classes, is over with Sherman Williams, and he's saying, look, at the high level that we're talking about here, SWOT analysis is a real thing, which is just something Larry's talking about. And it drives our ability to think about where we are and ask those deep questions. Now, are you using it as the frontline marketing manager in the stores? Is our buddy over there managing the salespeople using SWOT analysis? Probably not. Higher level stuff to think about how to set that strategy against the real world. So what are we going to do based on our SWOT analysis, okay? So one thing we say is, look, if we find some weaknesses inside our organization that we can control, what should we do? Well, I hope what you think about doing, assuming it's pertinent and important, is find a way to turn it into a strength. Get those guys who are selling cars that don't make it through finance, retrain them. Don't waste your time on people that can't pay for the car. Find that weakness, relevant to your strategy, and make it into a strength. If we're talking about a threat to you, and you can't control that, you've got to find a way to convert that threat into something that's an opportunity. Sony getting into electric vehicles, that's an interesting approach. Or find some way to dodge it, because otherwise it's going to come and smack you in your face. You're going to be, you know, hurt by whatever that thing is. And the sweet spot, of course, is given your analysis, you find a new opportunity that plays to your strength. Changing cultural values means that people are interested in sushi. And we sell groceries. We've never sold sushi, but we do know how to sell groceries. Wow, let's find out that we grow our sales of sushi to what it was, 45 million pieces of sushi a year. Match. And you can see how that can be overlooked by a grocery store. Why would I do sushi? You do the analysis. And you find a winner. This is Patrick Gorgon over at Protégé talking about SWOT in the technical world in which he lives. doing marketing research?
Protégé, the flagship brand that we are founded under is Swagbucks. That is a member rewards platform. In addition to that, we also acquired three other similar rewards platforms that complement Swagbucks. We have 120 million members globally. Anything that you would do online, such as shopping, booking travel, watching videos, playing games, our members can come to our websites and earn points back, much like you would be used to by using your credit card. Back in 2009, our chief revenue officer, Mendy, he saw an opportunity for one of those avenues to earn points back being answering a poll. When they put that out to our ecosystem of members, he saw that there was a trend in people really being willing to share their opinions. And so that kind of started what became our market research side of the business. From 2009 to 2014, we were kind of behind the scenes. Really, not many people knew about us, and even in the industry. And that was because we were selling a wholesale relationship to some of the other big research firms. So we were powering their surveys in the background. After 2014, we saw an opportunity to move direct and have more relationships with, say, a Kent State or market research firms or agencies. And so now we work with a slew of clients, thousands of clients that are really in any industry that has like a marketing team or an insights team that would want to pick up on trends, whether it's for testing ad concepts, new products that they're coming up with, store displays, what have you.
So we're really good. We have a group of people. They're engaged with us. They're earning points with us. It's a whole community of folk. Gee, wonder if they'd be interested in getting rewards for answering polls. A whole new area to us, marketing research. And obviously they've matched an opportunity, companies want research, with a strength from real people that they have a relationship with their polls. Success for them by doing the SWOT analysis and matching an opportunity with the
protégé.
So we do that. We have to have a market product focus and use that to set our goals. And what we're talking about here is a important marketing concept called market segmentation. In market segmentation, we identify groups of buyers who have needs that they share among themselves, common needs, and who will respond differently than other market segments to our marketing mix. I'm not being very brilliant today. Diet soda drinkers, diet soda, non-diet soda drinkers, okay? So we have different segments out there. They respond differently. We develop interesting things for the diet drinkers. We develop different things for the non-diet drinkers, perhaps. Different segments out there want different things from us. So we do this division. We find out all of the different groups that are out there, and we choose one or more groups to focus on. So doing market segmentation is the identification of different groups. Target marketing is picking one or more of those to focus on. So we let the people who want coffee flavored carbonated pro, we aren't going to do that. Somebody else can do that. So which groups are we going to focus on? That's the idea of target marketing. So we want our strategy to be focused on particular useful market segments. Here we are one more time then. We're assessing our market opportunities. We've talked about a little bit about how we do that through SWOT analysis. We've evaluated the market segments that are out there, having identified them. And now we're going to select a target market to drive through our system, set our marketing objectives, strategy, and our marketing program to satisfy. The customer value proposition is what you promise to do to satisfy the consumer needs, wants, and desires. What are you promising? Low price? Okay quality? Luxury goods? Speed? Technology? Whatever it is, it has to be relevant to your particular selected target audience. Has to be clear. Consumers don't buy things when they don't understand what you are, what you stand for, hence an integrated marketing program. And that customer value proposition has to state why your consumer should purchase from you and not from your competition. This, again, is your point of differentiation. Why buy from me as opposed to the guy down the street? So in the strategic marketing process, you have to understand, act on, and deliver the customer value proposition. So here you are, getting down to the marketing objectives, delivering what I just talked about. I'm not going to go over this chart, but this is just taken from your book. And it says the strategic marketing process starts with the SWOT analysis, which we just touched on, goes into the market product focus and goal setting, delivers a marketing program. You then implement that program and evaluate it to see how well it does in the marketplace. And then there's a whole bunch of steps under that overall strategic marketing process. We're thinking so far about really big companies. We've been thinking about P&G, and we've been thinking about Kroger's, et cetera. This is a little different take on how you might think about building your strategy from a small business viewpoint. It's called, as you can see, Jumbo Shrimp Marketing. See if this makes sense to you at all. Or not.
Jumbo Shrimp Marketing. Get bigger by acting smaller. When small businesses dream, they usually dream of becoming a bigger business. When you think about it, nearly every big business began as a small business. Nike's first sale came from the trunk of a car. Dell shipped its first custom-built computer from a college dorm room. And Starbucks, well, began its life as a mom-and-pop coffee shop. However, a bigger business doesn't always equate to being a better business. At some point, big becomes bad. Big becomes a matter of being convenient rather than being unique. Big becomes a game of market share, not customer care. Big becomes ubiquitous. Seems by the time a small business gets big, it's time for it to act small again. Paradoxical? You betcha. Impractical? No. There are countless businesses which have managed to get bigger but still retain their semblance of smallness. They get bigger by acting smaller. In essence, these businesses are like jumbo shrimp. Big, yet small. How can your business get bigger by acting smaller? You can start by following these five jumbo shrimp marketing rules.
So obviously he's being a little cutesy with what he's talking about, and to get us to think about ways that we might think about our growth, this idea. First of all, he says, look, focus on being the best. Don't focus on being the biggest, because that's going to drive you away from understanding your customer and the value you're providing. Be the best at whatever you're doing. Love your business. If you love your business, you're going to find that you're passionate, and passion draws passion. Passionate people, passionate employees, passionate customers. Anybody work for a place where they're really passionate about what they do? Yeah, where?
Spencer's.
Anybody shop at a place where they're really passionate about shopping there? Yeah, yeah. Can you share where that is or not really? Okay. Treat employees like family, because they are the people that are going to deliver your product or your service to those passionate consumers that are coming in. Treat them right. Not all big businesses do that. And of course, redefine success. Maybe it's not being the largest company. Maybe it's being the favorite one. Maybe it's being the one that people like the best or talk about the best or associate with. So he would argue that these are sensible rules for growth. And if you focus on these things and not on growth, you may find yourself growing, is his argument. So a little different way of thinking about it. And there are certainly places that focus on their strategy of being good but small.
Hey, if you want all the technology and products of a big bank, but with the personal attention of a true local bank, head to Farmers National Bank. Farmers, bigger small banking.
As though they had listened to the lesson we just taught. Bigger small banking. We focus on you to be successful. Step three, design the marketing program. We've talked before, and we'll talk again about the four P's of the marketing mix: product, price, and promotion, with the consumer at the center, that entity that you're trying to provide satisfaction to. So product, price, promotion, and strategy are the tools that we're going to use to implement our strategic plan and satisfy that consumer. So we're down there at the 10,000 foot level as we've drifted down from company mission through our market segments to our marketing objectives to our marketing mix. And they all have to work together, again, stolen from your book. So here are all the different pieces and parts, product, price, place, and promotion, fitting together in a solid block. I don't know if a block's a good image, but they all have to fit together in a cohesive way. Then we got to implement it. So whether you're a big company where you have to fight for resources from other areas of the organization, or an entrepreneur, you nonetheless have to find ways to obtain those resources to implement the marketing plan. Design the marketing organization. If you're brand new, how are you going to have people, places to implement what we've been talking about? Develop the schedules for rolling out product, for rolling out advertising, etc. And then execute that marketing program in an integrated way, hopefully
there's
with success. There's
a tool we use, and I don't know whether it's used widely. It's called SharePoint, and I'm guessing it's probably a Microsoft tool. And we use it to create these communities of interest on key performance indicators. And besides having that information available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, we also review those key performance indicators monthly in performance reviews where we compare our business plan against actual results and whether it's, you know, the financials, revenue, profitability, all the way down to warehouse error rates, customer service, number of calls, abandoned call rate, all the details of running a business. We review those key performance indicators every month. It's a pretty rigorous process. And there's no escaping it. Everyone goes through it every month, and it really has created a nice rigor in our business that everyone expects it. Everyone watches those, and I think, as a lot of people said, you know, what you measure, people will pay attention to, and their behavior will respond to what you measure. And so we try to make sure we measure the right things.
Okay. So
hi there. Pop it up on your screen in an integrated fashion, so you see it minute by minute, day by day, or is it once a month sort of thing you look at?
It's basically something that you have to go look at. But it does so in a way that in the morning when you log on, and the very first screen you see is a list of all the SharePoints that you have determined as an individual are important to you.
I interrupted myself talking. And so you have a situation where you're a manager, you have these strategic goals, you're trying to implement them at the marketing level, and you need to evaluate how they're going, how they're doing. And there's a key marketing principle here, or business principle, which maybe you've heard. People pay attention to what you measure. I had a faculty member one time talk to me, and he was very unhappy with his students. Why was he unhappy with his students? They weren't reading the textbook. Really? Well, what portion of your exam covers the textbook? He says, I don't cover that on the exam. Well, no wonder they're not using your textbook. People pay attention to what you evaluate. And so if you have a goal or an objective that you're trying to accomplish with your marketing program, use stuff to let people know you're going to measure whatever they're doing. Making sure that people that you're selling cars to can pass financing is a measure. All right, we're going to focus on that because it's important to our success. So that's the idea of evaluating how things are going. So we're down there where we're looking at the market response for our marketing program. We're evaluating it. We're getting feedback. And, of course, as necessary, controlling it, making changes at that level. For your info, as we move to mini test two, chapter one, you run into Appendix A, not testable, but you might find it interesting. It'll tell you how to build an effective marketing plan. And I think I can sense you're done with me. And so we're going to end this for mini test two. I'll send you the deets in an email. Thank you.